Eddie Olchuk of the NHL and NBC is one of our favorites. He joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. And before we talk hockey, Eddie, congratulations. As Mr. Brunt pointed out, you were the only member of NBC's August Preakness crew to pick Exaggerator. Well done.
Well, you know, every squirrel finds a nut, Stephen and Jeff. So, you know, it was one of those where...
It's a pretty good time to find a nut, my friend, during the Triple Crown.
You know,
That's not a bad nut, you know?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I felt that the equalizer would be the racetrack, and Exaggerator moves way up on an off track. And I compared it to the 1999 St. Louis Rams, the greatest show on turf in the National Football League, where... They were so good on the turf, so good in the dome, and then when they got to outside or on the grass, they, you know, I don't want to say that they became like everybody else, but they just did not, you know, they just did not play the same way as we see on turf. Mm-hmm. And I think Exaggerator is a horse that is an outstanding horse. I mean, he finished second in a Derby on a fast track, but my point is that he moves way up on an off track, and I had to stick to my guns, and was happy that he was able to cross the line first, and I'm even happier the horse that finished second and third in the way they came in. So it was a nice weekend for yours truly. So thank you very much for the acknowledgement.
Two things, Eddie, and then we'll move on to hockey. I hope NBC allows its employees to wager. Because you know there's an honor tradition in the press box at horse racing. I don't know if you know this, Blair, but they actually you could bet right in the press box. You could bet.
Oh, really?
You could bet the race. Yeah, which was one of the things when I the odd race I covered. It was one of the great revelations. Oh my God, there are people betting right here. But the other part, Ed, is it's great that you picked Exaggerator. It's got to be though for a racing guy like yourself. It's still a bit of a letdown. Nyquist is a great horse. Everybody acknowledges. Not having the opportunity to see that horse try and go the distance in the Belmont win a Triple Crown.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, when you're sitting there, you got a job to do, and you're seeing, you know, and you're analyzing how you think it's going to all break down or shake down in a race. But there is a party, and look, I mean, this is no different than last year with. You know, with American Pharoah, it's like, look, you know, I mean, if you think he's the best horse, you got to speak up and say what it is or, you know, and give that opinion. But it is great for horse racing and being a part of it last year for the first time and seeing that Triple Crown in person was just an amazing experience. And I think I told you, Jeff, this last year, I mean, that event that I was at the Triple Crown, I thought the 2010 gold medal game in Vancouver between the U.S. and Canada was the greatest sporting event that I was ever at. Now I'm taking away playing in the Olympics myself and playing in the Canada Cups and playing in the National Hockey League and winning a cup with the Rangers. I'm just saying as a fan and as somebody working in the media, like I thought that Olympic game between U.S. and Canada, Vancouver was just incredible, the gold medal game. But, you know, once I got to Belmont and seeing what American Pharoah did and how he did it and how the crowd erupted, to me, that was the greatest sporting event I ever been to. And, yeah, it's a little disappointing, Stephen, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he wasn't able to overcome the quick paces early and the off track, and now we live to fight another day. And then people will say next year, okay, well, who's the next one? Who's the next American Pharoah? But you know, we'll see what happens in a couple of weeks at the Belmont when they go a mile and a half.
All right, let's shift focus to a different race, the race for the Stanley Cup, the Sharks and Penguins. That starts on Monday. You know, Stephen and I were just talking a little bit about everything Pittsburgh's gone through this year.
Right.
You know, just the stories that guys got, you know, was it time to break up the Penguins, et cetera, et cetera. And then, you know, then you look at the Sharks and, you know, we're talking about sort of the, you know, the moves they made with their captain a couple of years ago. And there's always sort of similar questions with this team. These are two really good, never mind two really good teams. These are two really good stories meeting for the Stanley Cup, aren't they?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you look at what both general managers have done here, Jeff, over the course of the last year, you know, year-ish, really. Carl Hagelin, Trevor Daley, obviously, is out for the rest of the playoffs. Justin Schultz, bringing up the young players down from the American League that really have, you know, kind of give a boost to the team and made them much quicker and deeper and a little bit bigger when you look at guys like, you know, Kunako and Rust has got some good size. And they also changed coaches. Now you look at what happened in San Jose. The hot seat, Jeff, we talked about San Jose at the start of the year, and they were one of the teams I think everybody was looking at, and I was as well, as you get rid of Todd McClellan, who's a terrific coach. You know, you bring in Peter DeBoer, you make the big moves, you bring in Joel Ward, you bring in Paul Martin, you make the trade with Boston via Los Angeles to get Martin Jones. Joel Pavelski is your captain. You talk about taking away the C from Jumbo Joe Thornton. You know, there was a lot of pressure there, and they found a way to be really good on the road all season long and struggled at home. And in the playoffs, they found their swagger at home, continued on the road. So both teams, really, more so Pittsburgh because it's most recent, is because you're right. There were a lot of question marks, you know. Do you move one of the big two guys? You know, they weren't playing fast. Sidney Crosby was, what, 156 in scoring in the National Hockey League. I mean, you know, you can go on and on and on. But for me, at the end of the day, both these teams found their game and have become just really fun and really exciting to watch. And I think it's going to be a hell of a series. It's going to be really entertaining. And I didn't even mention some of the young guys that have come in San Jose that have kind of give a little bit of depth to the Pavelski hurdle, Thornton line. Patrick Marleau's been there for a while. Logan Couture is finally healthy and having a great playoff. But the Donskoys and the Melker Carlson type of players, Tommy Wingles, all those type of players. So both teams very similar. But it should be a heck of a series starting Monday night in Pittsburgh.
Now, Ed, you coached Sidney Crosby in his rookie season.
Yeah.
If I had told you then that at this stage in Sidney Crosby's career, we would be talking about him having a chance to win just his second Stanley Cup, and I know it's a team game, it's a cap league, there's all kinds of other factors involved in winning a Stanley Cup, but you know that the dynasties such as they are during his career to date would have been found in Chicago and Los Angeles sort of, and not in Pittsburgh. Would that have shocked you?
Well, look, I mean, I guess if you do the math, Stephen, what this is, Sid's what, 10th year?
Yep.
11th year? I think it's his 10th year, right? So, I mean, he's going to his third cup in 10 years. I think most franchises, I don't care what sport it is, would be satisfied going to three cups, in 10 years. Now, how many have you won, right? I mean, you don't want the Buffalo Bills type of, a resume where you get there and you're not able to win for whatever reason. But I think, look, I mean, I've said this, and Jeff, we've talked about it over the years. I mean, the Pittsburgh Penguins, I don't think there's a team that had underachieved more with what they've had and what they've been able to do come playoff time over the course of the last, five, 6 years. I mean, you think about it, the 1 year against Boston, again, I can't remember the years, but, they went to the conference final against Boston, and they scored two goals in four games and get swept by the Bruins. They lost a couple of Game 7s at home, moving on into the playoffs. They lose a Game 7 on the road. So, I mean, they've been close, but they haven't been able to do it with the team that they've assembled. So I would almost look at it the other way, Steven, and say, look, three opportunities in 10 years, that's pretty good. And especially, not knowing back then in 05 and 05, 06 where – you didn't know where the salary cap was going. That was all becoming very new to all of us. And now, I mean, you're starting to get an idea, see how hard it is. But to me, I think if I would have thought about that back in 05, 06, to have the opportunity to go three cups with Sidney Crosby over the course of a 10-year span, I would say, that's pretty good, because you need a lot of things to go right just to get there, let alone to win one or possibly two of the three if the Penguins could somehow beat the Sharks in the final.
You know, Eddie, I find the Sharks fascinating because Peter DeBoer is a guy who I think a lot of people would look at him as kind of a systems coach. You know, you got to have strong defensive values, preach possession, all that good stuff. But I look at some of their offensive numbers, but they had three players among the top 11 in scoring. Brett Burns, one of three expansion era defensemen with 350 more shots on goal in a single season. How are they able to adhere to Peter DeBoer's defensive principles and also find time to create this much offense?
Well, I would have to say it's because of their ability to be able to get up and down the ice. Jeff, I do. I think, I mean, you got to be able to wheel. You got to be able to skate. And, if you can do that and play that way, you're going to have layers of support, and you got to read and react. If, you know, you got a guy like Burns who's jumping into the play, and you got to make sure that you got guys that are have the ability and the hockey smarts to be able to sit back and read on that. But I just think that, you know, because they are so good at the transition game, they are so good, and they got some big guys on that team, and they can get up and down the ice, is that, you know, you're probably a little bit more apt to go ahead and err on the side of offense every once in a while. Look, they play an up-tempo type of game, but don't kid yourself. When the game gets snug and they know when they need to shut it down, they're able to do that. And, you know, you talk about scores. I talked about this last night on our broadcast, closing out the game in Pittsburgh last night, and, you know, down here in the States on NBCSN, and you know, I said we were you know, broaching the final and just kind of setting it up and said, look, there's a guy by the name of Joe Pavelski out there. And if I would tell you is that there's only one player in the National Hockey League that has scored more goals in the last 3 years than Joe Pavelski, I think we all would know who that guy is. And that's pretty salty company when you think about all of the other tremendous goal scorers we have in the league. Besides Alexander Ovechkin, and Joe Pavelski second on that list over the course of the last 3 years. But what makes him so good is that he is so smart, and he can dodge in and out. He can kill penalties. He can win faceoffs. He's just an intelligent player. And I think people that, you know, may not know Joe Pavelski all that well and maybe look at it and go, wow, he's having a hell of a playoff. Like, you know, this is, you know, just one of those things. No, this isn't one of those things. This guy is consistent. He's a winner. He's won at every level that he has played at. And I think people are going to get a pretty good indication to see how smart Joe Pavelski is. And, you know, maybe he doesn't get the credit he deserves. You know, I think he's still, you know, there's no doubt. I think he's the most underrated player in the league, because I think if you would ask that question, Jeff and Steven, to about even goals, I didn't even dig deep into points. I just looked at goals and go, give me the top five goal scorers over the course of the last 3 years. I'd be very surprised if, you know, 6 or 7% of the people would throw Joe Pavelski's name out in a list of 10 to try to get the top five, and he's a special player. So, you know, when you have smarts like that and you have guys that are big and heavy and can play, and look, I didn't even mention Jumbo Joe Thornton, because he has just played out of his mind, still one of the best passers that we've had in the National Hockey League the last 20 years. It's a pretty special thing they got going on in San Jose.
It's obviously you don't get to this stage, Ed, with crappy goaltending. So they both,
right.
But is there? We will talk about it in the final. Is there a goaltending advantage, you know, either way when Jones v. Murray?
I don't believe so. I mean, look, two rounds ago for the Pittsburgh Penguins, in my opinion, and from the chair that I sit in, for what it's worth, Matt Murray outplayed Braden Holtby, and the turning point for me for the Penguins to get to where they are. Game 3, round 2, the Washington Capitals outshoot the Pittsburgh Penguins. I believe they outshot them 49-23, and that's a game that the Capitals should have won, but they didn't. It was a goalie win. It was the first, second, third star of the game. This kid has performed really well. And look, the last couple of games, Tampa didn't get a whole heck of a lot. And you could sit there and we could talk all day long and debate why. I think a lot has to do more with the way that Pittsburgh defended than it was that maybe what Tampa did not do. Yeah, they had their surges. Yeah, they had their times when they had the Penguins on the run. But Pittsburgh's checked pretty well. And I thought the other way. I thought that Tampa would be able to outcheck the Pittsburgh Penguins in this series and find a way to get to the Stanley Cup final. They were not able to do that. The door was open in a game 6. They threw an egg. I mean, they threw a dud that game without question. And you give a team an opportunity to hang around, that's what happens. And I even go back to what happened with St. Louis, and I know I'm kind of going off the road here, but look at St. Louis, right? Mm-hmm. They had a chance to close out Chicago in 5 games. They didn't do it. What ended up happening? They go 7 games. They had a chance to close Dallas out in 6 at home. What happened? They had to travel to Dallas and win another game. Those games add up. So when you got an opportunity to go ahead and finish a team off and knock them right down, you have to do that. And I think in that series, and again, watching on television for me is much different in person, but I think that St. Louis extending those first 2 rounds had a big impact on what they didn't have against the San Jose Sharks. And when you play against a team like that that's big and heavy and quick and getting the goaltending, you're asking for an awful lot. The best players offensively did the job for San Jose. Tarasenko did not, and that was the biggest difference for what I saw on TV. So long-winded, Steven. I really wouldn't give an edge either way because, you know, both guys are here on this stage of being the guy for the first time in their career. And, you know, do I want to say it's a wash? I probably would say it's a wash, but there is something for being an older guy and a guy that had been there, right, like Martin Jones had in L.A. and winning a Stanley Cup and seeing what the hell goes on. So maybe a slight edge with Jones, but the way the guys played, I would say it's a toss-up.
Well, and again, if we mention Marc-Andre Fleury's name between now and the end, something's gone terribly wrong, correct?
Hey, look, let's not forget what happened last year with Chicago and Nashville. You know, I mean, it's different because Crawford did not play well early in that series.
Yeah.
Fleury obviously was hurt and rust and everything else. But look, that net was Scott Darling's to lose. And Joel Quenneville stayed with him once he pulled Corey Crawford. And all of a sudden, it's game three, and it's four, and it's five after he struggled. And Joel started him in game six. And what happened? He gave up three goals in the first 8 minutes, and here comes the tap on the shoulder. Corey Crawford comes in relief, and the rest is history. So very similar because Crawford had won a Stanley Cup before, and he came in relief for a young guy that played really well. I know it's different, but there are some similarities to what the hell went on last year in round one with Chicago and Nashville with Corey Crawford and Scott Darling. And Marc-Andre Fleury's got to be ready just in case because you just never know.
You know, I thought one of the other real stories, not just in the series against St. Louis for San Jose, but throughout the playoffs. And indeed, I guess if you want to go back to the middle of February, it's been Logan Couture who has returned. I believe he's among the NHL leaders, the leaders in scoring in the postseason, if not at the top. He's reminded us how good he was when he first came into the league, isn't he? I mean, he really has reminded us that. He's just such a good player.
Yeah, he's a guy that's is really grown on me over the years, and I think he's learned, Jeff. I think that he understands what his strengths are. I think sometimes he understands it's okay to live to fight another day from shift to shift. I think Todd McClellan made big headway with Logan Couture over the last couple of years when Todd was still there coaching. So, he's got tremendous skill level. Is he a depth guy there? You could argue he is when you look at Thornton and Pavelski and being on that top line. But when you can have a guy like Logan Couture who can settle in and be a tremendous offensive support guy on a so-called second line, a guy that can kill penalties, obviously he can play in the power play. He's become a really reliable player, and has matured a lot, and I think that has certainly helped his game out, and one of the reasons why. You're right, I think they got three guys, right, with 20-plus points, which is just, I mean, it's just incredible. I mean, those are just incredible numbers, and I'm sure they're looking forward to dropping the puck and get ready for game one in Pittsburgh.
So one last thing, Ed, before we go. Steven Stamkos made his dramatic return last night. Yeah. It wasn't enough, but he looked like Steven Stamkos, I thought.
But
other than the World Cup, where do we see him next?
You know what? I have no idea. I really don't. I mean, I think that when you look at the situation and my experience and looking at, you know, how things have kind of gone, unless he wants to stay in Tampa and it's at the number that they want to bring him back at, it's probably going to be a lot less at what probably a couple of other teams would be willing to throw at Steven Stamkos. And look, it's all about what he wants to do. And you don't get that opportunity very often to be the big man on campus when it comes to a free agency, and certainly Steven Stamkos will be that. It's all what he wants to do. I'm not sure if he'll stay. I would, if you're asking me if this is a horse race, if I'm picking Exaggerator or whatever.
Yes.
I mean, I would pick that. No, I would pick that he will not be back in Tampa. Where he will end up, I have no idea. But again, just seeing how this is all played out, and you don't get that opportunity very often. And it's his right. And, you know, can Tampa afford to lose him for nothing? That's a tough pill to swallow, but you look at the success that they had without Steven Stamkos. Is that an easier pill to swallow, considering that they were only one game away? You know, I know he played last night, but they played the majority of the playoffs without him. But
well, I think watching
replace a guy like that for sure. But I think it comes down to what does the player want to do, because he has the hammer, and when you got it, you're going to use it to your advantage, and you don't get many opportunities. As we all know, it's a business, and you got to take advantage when you have the when you have the momentum on your side.
I think Jonathan Drouin took the ownership and the management off the hot seat there, didn't he? Really, in terms of the fan base there?
Yeah, no question. But look, I mean, I tip my hockey helmet to Steve Yzerman, because you know, look, here's a guy that looked flat out bailed on you. Did he not, Steven?
Mm-hmm.
He bailed, and he bailed out on the organization, and he tried to force the hand. And he had no rights, right? I mean, he had no leverage, zero leverage, unless the team would trade him. And they sat, and then he had to eat a little humble pie, and the Lightning let him come back, which was the right thing to do. And next thing you know, there's an injury. And if that doesn't happen, is Jonathan Drouin playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs? Probably not. And give the kid credit. He came up and showed what type of player he is. He's got a lot to learn, but you see the upside. I mean, he has got some ability, and that is tough to find, and you're right. Maybe that plays into the decision of saying, okay, well, if you want $8 million a year, Steven Stamkos, we're willing to go to 7, and we're willing to go 3 years instead of 8 years. Whatever it plays, you do have a little bit of you do have some leverage if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, because you have a young player that you anticipate is going to be able to eat up those minutes. He's not going to be a goal scorer like Steven Stamkos, but he looks like a guy who's going to be able to put up. If he plays regular next year, I would say, if you're doing hockey pools and stuff, I would probably say it's pretty fair to say that you could probably mark him down for 65 points, because and that's not easy to do in a National Hockey League. He'd be a guy that probably gets you 24 to 25 and, you know, somewhere in that 45 assist range.
Eddie, as always, it was great to talk to you. I look forward to your work during the playoffs, and we'll do it again. Should be a fascinating series. As I said, there's certainly no shortage of storylines, and the hockey's going to be fun. Hockey is going to be fast, isn't it?
It'll be great. It'll be up and down, and looking forward to game one in Pittsburgh on Monday night. So you guys have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you soon.